Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. Time to mark the feast of St. John of God, which, as you probably know, the Church remembers on the 8th of March each year. For this, we join the Prior General of the Order of the Hospitallers of St. John of God, Brother Donatus Falcon, who tells me of the particular charism of this order. How would you define the charism of your particular order? Would you add an extra vow to the other three, charity, for example?
It's interesting that you should ask me that. If you had access to our literature or that type of thing, or the work that we do, you'd come to that kind of conclusion that possibly this group of people might have a fourth vow, which we have. It's called hospitality, the vow of hospitality. And really, it's the charism. It sums up who we are and what we're about. And it goes back to St. John of God himself, who was born 500 years ago. Born in Portugal, worked in Spain, spent most of his life in Spain. And after his conversion...
At 40 years of age?
At 40 years. He had a conversion type of experience, which was interpreted as a nervous breakdown. It may very well have been. Nothing would change if it was a nervous breakdown, because from there on in, his whole life changed completely. Very special grace that he received, and he ended up in the dungeons of the Royal Hospital in Granada. Well, I suppose there were places in the centre of the hospital where people were treated royally, but not the mentally sick. There was a place for them in the dungeons, really, where they were chained and they were starved and beaten. And that was the treatment for a person who was considered to be mentally unstable, unwell. And John of God received that treatment. And he accepted, he was quite happy to accept the treatment that was given to him, because he felt, well, at 42, I look back and really, it was a total waste. I've done nothing. I was in the wars, I was a soldier, I was a shepherd, a bookseller. That was probably where I gained most of my position in the city of Granada as a bookseller. Most people would have known me as a bookseller. So you might say I had a little business going. That was the best that I had done so far, but really that was nothing. So to make up for my past, he was willing to accept the treatment meted out to him. But then he saw the people around him. They were chained, they were starved, they were dirty, there was only straw for a bedding. Treated worse than animals. And that really infuriated him. And he did speak with the staff that this shouldn't be the way, and of course you don't remonstrate with the people who've got the power over you. So he received a double treatment. Not only was he ill, but he was arrogant. But eventually convinced them that he was feeling better, and if they allowed him his freedom, that he would look after the sick, the others, his fellow inmates, which he did. And really there was born the Order of St. John of God, because from there on he made a commitment to himself and to his suffering brothers and sisters that when he got out of that place, that he would start something. And he started a movement, hospitality. He first house, he had in different houses because they all became too small. Still, we've just received it back after 170 years in Grin, a hospital that was being planned while he was still alive. He was a part of the planning committee, which is a model hospital for the time, even for today. And 12 years later, when he died, he got the equivalent of a royal send-off, a state funeral. The entire city of Granada mobilized to his funeral. and divide with each other to carry his coffin. It took hours and hours to pass a very short period of time, more than 6 hours that you'd walk in about a half a minute. So that movement started in Granada and has continued for 500 years, and we're now in 51 countries in the world. We have about 1,300 brothers and 50,000 lay co-workers who work with us. We give a lot of emphasis since Vatican II on ongoing education and formation in our philosophy and values of the order for our co-workers. And we give them not only work, but also responsibility and the executive authority to make decisions. The only person above them is the provincial. So they report to the provincial, but in the day-to-day running of the hospital or centre of service, that they are fully responsible. So we work in partnership with our co-workers. So we the resolution of the General Chapter we had recently in 2006 was that the brothers and co-workers, we are united in the mission. And the challenge for us is the transmission of the values and philosophy to the co-workers so that they will continue to work as St. John of God in the manner in which he would approve of. And that's what we're doing today.
And what we're doing today, Brother Faulkon insists, is setting up houses of hospitality, houses of God, model projects where the clinically depressed receive support and above all are kept in their own environment. Like in Malawi, for example.
In Malawi, the Order of St. John of God has set up a model service in mental health that would be the envy of any industrialized country. It has happened because of one individual who had a dream, the same as St. John of God had a dream. John of God's dream, John of God's prayer, to have a place of my own where I can bring the poor and the mentally sick and to serve them as I wish. And this brother out in Africa, an Irish brother who was in the bishop himself, he had the same dream, to do something really different, appropriate to the culture, for people suffering from mentally ill, because the mentally sick are either in chains or they're walking naked in the streets.
The sight of the mentally ill in chains or walking naked in the streets inspired this Irish brother to set up a community-based mental health service.
The whole community is involved, and it involves every aspect of the life of the community, because anything that happens in the community, there's a mental health component. If there's a drought, for example, what people are going to be anxious, they're going to be depressed, they're going to be, what are we going to do? So with our co-workers in Ireland, we have about 2,000 co-workers in Ireland, and they give a day for Africa. In other words, one day's salary for Africa. And with that, they raised about €250,000. They had some other events, but what the bulk of the money came from the salaries of the day for Africa, which the co-workers, everybody gave willingly. And the beautiful thing about it, they saw the money going exactly to what it was, to relieve drought. So they, immediately, there was grain. They bought grain and all that type of thing to help the families of the patients, the clients, and the co-workers. And then to say, well, okay, now everybody's been fed, but we have to look ahead. We, you know, this is going to happen again. So they got the experts in, agricultural experts, who were out of a work government. They were all Malawians. They were out of work because there was no water. So they employed them to teach the local people how to sow the maize and coffee. Now there are 1,000 families who will benefit from this, and the money coming in, they have to pay back. There's no handouts. You get a loan, you're helped, given advice, and then you have to pay back. And that goes into a fund, and that goes to help other families. Now a brother from Sierra Leone heard about this idea, so he came across, and he saw, and he's gone back, and he's now helping 700 families in his area. It takes initial investment, so the Irish province and the Spanish province together have raised money to get the initial thing going, and then after that, it's self-financing. in Mental Health Week, which is in October, they have programs on the radio on mental health. They have banners around the city on mental health. The co-workers go and talk in the schools. They have conferences for community leaders, for religious leaders, ministers, priests and others, for teachers, policemen, to inform them about mental health and how to keep healthy mentally. And should somebody show some signs that there is some stress there, then to intervene, to show how to intervene. Now, instead of people being admitted, they're sending out teams. Instead of having the stigma of going to the hospital, the team comes out and intervenes at an early stage and helps the family, because if it has a breakdown takes place in the family, then the family are part of the treatment. So helps the family to help the person, their loved one, who is undergoing a difficult time, and to support that. And once you get into it, there's so many ways you can help and become involved.
It's not bring hope.
And bring hope. Oh, yes. This is the wonderful thing about it. It brings hope to people who otherwise have lost hope. And not only the people who are benefiting directly, but the wider community see what's happening. When it was being planned, the architect wants to put up a big wall. We said, no wall. No wall. This is open. We had a lot of struggle with the authorities to have it our way. It's landscaped. When the nobody else has flowers or because of lack of rain, the rain is safe when it comes in heavy. There's tanks underground. So they have green lawns and they have flowers. And it's really a magnificent place. And it has raised the whole tone of the city. And that's to do with the mental health of the people. They have other struggles going on in life, obviously, in a developing country, but this keeps them as healthy as one can. So I keep urging people, draw on the experience we've got. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. If you want to go into whatever field you want to go into, whether it's caring for the elderly, whether it's in the area of mental health, whether it's the area of learning disability, if it's the area of general medicine or hospice care, you can be sure that someplace in the world that we're doing it, we're involved in it.
After the Second Vatican Council, Brother Falcon added, "We felt the need to go back to the scriptures, back to our founder, because over the centuries we had become increasingly monastic."
It's been a struggle for us to leave that monasticism behind, that cloistered approach. Our hospitals were known as monastery hospitals. In other words, we lived with the patients. We went up and down the corridor saying our psalms to the dining room. We'd meet the patients on the corridor. And everywhere we went, we were surrounded by the people we served. And we took it as quite normal. But things have changed. The whole approach to psychiatry and mental health has changed. The whole approach to religious life have changed. So we have to demonicalize ourselves and see ourselves as apostolic religious who are sent out to the marketplaces of the world to bring the good news, to caring for the downtrodden, the sick, the marginalised.
You are listening there to the Prior General of the Order of the Hospitallers of St John of God, Brother Donatus Falcon. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.